So welcome to the fourth morning of the retreat, I think, if I count correctly. We're in the middle of the retreat now, and so in the middle of the retreat it's a time to do the middle way, to go into the middle of things. So today's talk is going to be on focusing the mind. Because so far we've talked about just the basic method of meditation, some of the hindrances, and yesterday about mindfulness, especially improving that mindfulness, getting it strong, getting energized and bright. Now we go into focusing the mind. So far I've taught you about just leaving things alone, letting things go, not doing anything. And sometimes people think, oh, how is that going to ever get into this stable, peaceful, still states of mind? But it does. It happens naturally. It's a natural tendency of whatever we see, whatever we hear, to go to the center of things, the most important, the most beautiful part of it. It's called focusing of the senses. And the usual simile which I give is a simile of the thousand-petaled lotus. Any of you who've seen a thousand-petaled lotus, you're very, very privileged, because we've only seen about 10 or 20, one at most. But according to the according to the mythology, there's such a thing called a thousand-petaled lotus. And you have to open up each of those petals, one after the other, to see the jewel in the heart of the lotus, see what's right inside of things. What's inside of this moment? What's inside of your body? What's inside of you? What's the center of all this? So opening up the lotus is like focusing, going in to whatever you're experiencing. I mentioned this in the first talk when I gave this explanation of this word asavas, the outflowings of the mind going out into things. That's the way of the world. You never get any wisdom or any peace or any real bliss that way. But there's the opposite way, which goes against the current, against the stream of those outflowings, which goes in and in and in and in. And it goes to the center of things. That's like going to the center of the lotus. Now, the reason I like this simile of the lotus, because it brings up how to center, how focusing actually happens. Because if you have a lotus at night time, it closes out. And when the first rays of the sun warm the outermost petal of the lotus, because of the warmth of the sun, the outermost petal begins to open up. And that allows the sun to warm the next layer of petals, so that too can open up. And that can reveal the third layer of petals, so that can open up. Every layer of petals has to be opened up to reveal what's inside of it, so that too can open up because of the warmth of the sun. So you can imagine a thousand-petal lotus takes quite a time to open up. And that sun has to maintain its warmth for a long period of time. You can imagine if a cloud comes into that sky and obstructs the sun, so there's no warming going on, then all those petals close, 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 very quickly. Now that's the simile. In that simile, the sun stands for your mindfulness, just being aware. And the thousand-petal lotus stands for whatever you're watching, this moment now. And all you need to do is to keep the mindfulness on this very moment. It doesn't matter what this moment is. Sometimes those lotuses are so dirty and grubby because they've been out in the wind, out in the dust. And they look completely unpromising, but in the heart of even the most dirty, grubby, unpromising looking lotus, there is a beautiful refined petals right in the center. So it doesn't matter what you're experiencing. Just be mindful of it. Keep the attention there. Don't let it move to something else. And if you keep the attention on this thing, you'll find the mind does open up. You go inwards. The petals open. And you go into what's inside. And that opens to see what's inside of that. And that opens to see what's inside of that. You go through these stages of meditation. a focusing of the mind, a going inwards. Which is why you start off with whatever you're experiencing and you go to the center of time. It's like the petals of past and future, because you've just been focused in this moment. They open up to reveal this beautiful present moment. And you don't have to do anything, to stay still. If you start to do something, it's like the clouds come and stop the sun, and the petals close up again. You're wasting time. You just keep the mindfulness on this moment, and it opens up, and you see the present moment. You keep it on the present moment. Doesn't matter what the present moment's like, unpromising, painful, unpleasant, whatever it is, just keep it there. And soon it will open up into the silent present moment awareness. It does it by itself. You don't get hold of those petals and start peeling them one after the other. You just break them all off. That is not the way to open a lotus. You've got to just warm it, and it opens by itself. And in the center of the silence, you don't need to do anything. If you do anything, the mindfulness is moving away from its object. Stay with the silence. Soon you'll feel the breath. The beautiful, not the beautiful breath, just the ordinary breath going in and out. It's right in the middle of the silence. Just allow the mind to stay there. And it opens up by itself. In its own time. Natural time. It doesn't follow your agenda. If you're in a hurry and you have to get enlightened quick, I'm sorry, it will not work for your agenda. You have to just give it the time it takes. And after a while, that beautiful breath, that ordinary breath, breathing in and breathing out, it opens by itself to see the essence of the breath. And little external things like in and out, beginning and end, disappear when it's ready to do so. And you're focusing in. If you really notice this, you'll find out this beautiful breath appears from the very middle of the ordinary breath. It is literally a going inside what you've already experienced now. Silence is in the middle of time. In the middle of the present moment. The breath, the one I like to watch, is the one which is in the middle of the silence. Sometimes even visualize it, breathing in and out like it's surrounded by this ring, this protective force field of silence, which doesn't allow any thoughts to come in, just watching the breath. And soon the mind goes even further in and sees this beautiful breath. It's usually not accompanied by any of the coarse attributes like in or out, or rough or smooth, or long or short. Those are all gone. Those belong to the petal which has already opened up. Now you just see the essence of the breath. And it's beautiful. If you ever notice in a flower, the innermost petals are always the most beautiful ones, and the most fragrant, and also just the most gossamer thin. These are the ones which are the most delicate and the most profound. And as you go deeper into that lotus, you start to see these amazingly beautiful petals. The ones on the outside, they've been weathered by life and they're not so beautiful at all. But when you go inside, they get very delightful, very fascinating, and very charming. And you go inside the beautiful breath, and there from the very middle comes a nimitta. It comes when it is ready to come. All you do is just stay still and just watch. Sometimes those little petals, though, the petal between the beautiful breath and the nimitta, sometimes it opens and then closes and opens and closes. Sometimes it just doesn't really know yet whether it's time. So sometimes people have got this beautiful breath and the nimitta comes up and it doesn't last. And sometimes they just go back to the beautiful breath and the nimitta comes up again. They're almost sort of in between. And they ask me sometimes, what should you do? Should I go to the nimitta? Should I stay with the breath? What should I do? And you know my answer? The answer is nothing. Do nothing! You forgot the instructions. Just watch. Let the mind decide. The petal doesn't decide, oh, now it's time to open, or I shall close. It goes according to nature. When the sun warms that petal, when it's the right time, it will open. Sometimes it's warming it, but it doesn't open fully. So you've got half your mind is on the beautiful breath and half is on the nimitta. Leave it. Don't worry about anything. Just allow that to be. Just keep the mindfulness still. Because if you move off and say, what should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? It's like the sun of mindfulness goes behind the clouds. And all the petals, close, 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 close. And you've got to go right back to the beginning again. Because you blowed it. So, next time, just let it be. Don't do anything. And that sun just warms up. And then just the nimitta is just there. It's opened up and you see this beautiful nimitta, which is a sign of your mind, of your citta. And now you've got to focus into that. And how do we do that? Some people that keep all the instructions up to there. When they get to the nimitta, they forget everything. They get excited. Well, I've got the nimitta now. I'm set. Now I'm going to make this into jhana. They start playing around with it. They start controlling it. They start doing something with it. And of course, it all falls apart again. So when the petal of the nimitta appears to you, leave it alone. Just allow the sun of mindfulness just to warm it up. Don't do anything. Don't allow mindfulness to move. And then it warms up this beautiful nimitta. At the right time, when it decides, not when you decide, the nimitta gets brighter and brighter. And then it opens up. And right inside the petal of the nimitta is a beautiful first jhana. You get it? You get it, the first jhana. That's right in the center. And anyone who gets into these jhanas say, well, I've got the first jhana, now what do I do? Stupid. Just allow the mindfulness to stay with the first jhana. And in its own time, it just opens up to reveal in the center of the first jhana is this beautiful second jhana. In the middle of the second jhana, when that opens up, is the third jhana. In the middle of the third jhana, guess what's in the middle of the third jhana? Of course, fourth jhana. In the middle of that comes the first immaterial attainment. It just opens up like this, the petals of a lotus. And then the second immaterial, the first immaterial jhana, is the base of infinite or unbounded, unmeasured space. And then inside of that is the base, the experience of unbounded consciousness. In the middle of that is the base of nothing. In the middle of that is where perception starts to disappear. The base where you're neither perceiving, nor are you perceiving. Neither nor. In between. That's the last little petal. And the middle of that petal, in the center. Absolute emptiness, where everything ceases, Nibbana. So this is what we do, we're opening up the mind, opening up everything. And this is actually, if you want to see Nibbana, that's how you see it, the jewel in the heart of the lotus. That's what I said earlier on, that in this very moment you're experiencing that, right in the middle is jhana, right in the middle of that is the immaterial time, right in the middle of this very moment is Nibbana. But it's covered up by so many layers. We can't even see it. We can't perceive it. It's just too deep in this moment. And so the whole process of meditation is focusing inwards to see what is in the center. And there's many similes for that. The simile of the thousand-petal lotus is my favorite one because it shows you don't do anything. You just keep mindfulness stable. And if it is stable, the mindfulness is keeping on this, whatever you're watching now, naturally, after a while, it does open. That's its nature. So if you're not getting any progress, it must be you're doing something. You're moving your awareness now onto this, now onto that. Yeah, I've done this. Now what should I do? Now I've done that. Now what should I do? What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Stop doing anything. Just watch. Be the silent observer. And you find you focus in. So it makes the point, the thousand petal lotus simile, makes the point that one is mindful. Fully mindful, fully alert, but doesn't move. The knower, mindfulness, is what gets all the energy. And the doer is starved. You let it go, you let it be. You allow that beautiful, powerful mindfulness to be absolutely still. And it's a common experience which people have, which sometimes they don't realize. And I usually tell them the simile of the television. Because many of you watch the TV. I tell people actually in the flat, we've got TV in the flat. And I don't mind the monks watching the TV. saw them this morning, they were watching the TV, my two monks. They were. But they didn't switch it on. They watched the TV without any programs on. And that's the TV which I like to watch. Because it's so peaceful and so calm. And you've got this lovely grey screen. And if you're standing at the right angle and you watch the grey screen, you can see a reflection of your face. You see who's doing the watching. Try it next time. So, but when you watch a TV, you turn on the program. And it might be some news, or it might be some movie, it might be some sport, maybe your favorite TV program. And you watch it. And you should notice that when you first switch on the TV, you can see the photograph of, you know, your relations, which is on top of the television. Please don't put a Buddha statue on top of the television. I've seen that in some houses as well. You see the photo above the TV. You see the magazines or the it used to be a VCR, now it's a DVD player, whatever. It's underneath. You can see the sides of the screen. But it's fascinating, after a few seconds, you can't see what's above, below, and to the sides of your TV screen. You can't even see the edges of the screen. Which is why you could have a circular screen for your TV. You could have it diamond, you could have it jagged shaped. You know, we could actually have a huge different market for TV screens by just having different shapes of screen. You don't need a square screen. In fact, the shape becomes irrelevant, because after a few moments, you can't see the edges of the screen. You have focused inwards to the center of the TV, where all the action is happening. And having understood that, how you focus in, this is why I've been telling a lot of people that those of you who go to the shops and see these huge plasma screen TVs, which are about 3 foot wide and 3 foot deep, huge things, and you pay a couple of thousands of dollars at least for one of those, you are wasting your money. Because when you start watching in the center, you can't see the edges of the screen. And if it was a tiny TV or a big TV, in your consciousness it would appear exactly the same. When you're watching the movie, when you're into the TV program, it doesn't matter at all whether it's a small screen or a big screen. So, now I've also saved you a couple of thousands of dollars. So you don't need to buy that big plasma screen TV anymore. Why do you know that psychology? So please, 10% to the Buddhist Society. Now, this is just what happens. You focus in on things. If you keep watching it for long enough, you focus in. And it's the same, those of you who've been looking at me. If you've been noticing what was happening when you were paying attention to me speaking. When you first saw me, you would have seen the two monks to either side. But after a while, those two monks disappear. They fall off the edge of the screen as you focus in. And if you look at my nose, after a while, my ears disappear. And all you can see is the nose. This is what happens when you focus in. Whatever you pay attention to eventually fills the screen. Now, this is an important thing to understand, because sometimes in meditation, you are distracted. You might start off watching the present moment. I say watching the breath. Let's do the breath meditation. You may be watching the breath and there's a sound outside. Maybe the sound of the trucks, or maybe the sound of some birds, or the sound of some person who's making a noise. And what happens is, where before the breath was at the center of the screen, now, because that's a disturbance, you focus on that, and that becomes what's in the center of your screen. And after a while, you focus in on disturbance. You can't feel your breath anymore. You're just thinking about the sound. This is the reason why these things disturb us, and they take us away from our meditation object. That is a wrong way of dealing with disturbances. The correct way is, if there's a disturbance, you can still allow it to be on the screen of your consciousness. but don't put it in the center. So the breath is still in the center of the screen of your consciousness. That is in the middle, the main thing, the most important thing you're watching. And the birds or the sound of that person coughing or whatever, they're on the edge. You can experience them, you know it's there, it's on the screen, but not central. What happens then? Because you're not centering on the disturbance, nor are you trying to get rid of it, you're just allowing it to be, but on the edge of your consciousness, and you're centering on the breath, after a while, the disturbance falls off the edge of the screen. As you center in on the breath, you can't hear it anymore. It's exactly what happens when somebody's watching a movie, and their wife says, "The dinner is ready, dear." They hear that, but it's on the edge of the screen and it soon falls off. While they carry on watching the movie. It's not important, so they don't center it. What's still important is the movie. They hear it, but it's, you know, it's over there somewhere, and you're still watching in the middle. That's why it disappears. So imagine if you can do that with the ache in your leg. It's a pain in the leg, but you're watching the breath. You know, I hear you, go away. And it soon disappears. Because you're not giving it importance, you're not centering it. So that's a great way of dealing with difficulties or disturbances in the meditation. Keep the center of your screen of attention, your field of inner vision, on your main object. Say the breath. And disturbances, don't allow them to take center stage. And because they don't take center stage, naturally, you don't have to force them off. Don't have to do anything. They fall off by themselves as the mind naturally centers. And the other simile is a famous simile. It's from the Hindu tradition. So I was told. I tried to find it. Could never find it. It's about the teacher and his three students. And he was teaching them focusing the mind, teaching them meditation, teaching them concentration using the art of archery. And he trained them for many days, many weeks, many months. And he wanted to give them a test to see if they really knew what focusing, concentration really was. So he gave the first student a bow and an arrow. And he got a stuffed bird and he put it on a branch of a tree a long way away. To hit that bird from such a distance would be a great feat of archery. In fact, you could not do it by normal means. Only through the power of samadhi and concentration. So he told his first student, "Soon I'm going to ask you to shoot the arrow from that bow. I want you to hit that bird, but not anywhere. I want that arrow to go through the left eyeball of that bird, nowhere else. The only way you can do that," the teacher told his disciple, "is to make yourself one with the target. Concentrate, focus, and when you're ready, before you shoot the arrow, give me a sign." So the student focused on the bird, focused on the left eyeball of the bird, focused and concentrated, and after half an hour, he gave the master a signal. And the master said, "Can you see the bird in the tree?" And the student, without losing his focus, said, "Yes, master." And the master pushed him away. "Stupid disciple, grab the bow and arrow. Go and do some more meditation, you stupid idiot." And he gave the bow and arrow to disciple number two. "Same instructions, disciple. I'm going to ask you to shoot that arrow through the left eyeball of that stuffed bird, a long way away on the branch of a tree. The only way you can do that is if you really learn how to focus. Become one with your target. Take your time. Before you shoot the arrow, give me a sign." After 1 hour of focusing, the disciple gave the sign. And the master said again, "Can you see the bird on the tree?" And without taking his attention away, the disciple said, "What tree?" "Can you see the bird?" said the master. "Oh yes, stupid disciple." He pushed the disciple away, grabbed the bow and arrow, "Go and learn some more meditation, you idiot." And he gave the bow and arrow to the third disciple. If that ever happens to you, always make sure you're the third disciple. Because the third disciple is always the one who gets the praise, who does it right. So I give it to the third disciple and said, you've got to make yourself one with the target. You've got to shoot that arrow through the left eyeball of the bird. Not the right eyeball, not the nose, not the ears. That one place. And the only way you can do that is make yourself one with the target. Focus, meditate, take your time. But before you shoot the arrow, give me a sign. So the third disciple focused and meditated and concentrated. 1 hour went past. 2 hours went past. 3 hours went past before he gave the sign. And the master said, can you see the bird on the tree? And the disciple said, what tree? Can you see the bird? What bird? Ah, said the master, what can you see? All I can see, master, is one eyeball. Ah, said the master, shoot. And he shot. And he went right through that one eyeball. That's what he could see. That was all that there was for him. So the arrow had to go there. That's called focusing. Being one with your target. And it's a great story because this is what happens in meditation. Whatever you focus on, you're focusing on that left eyeball of a bird. After a while, the tree disappears. It's on the edge of the screen. And it falls off. And then you see the bird. And after a while, the body of the bird disappears, you just got its head. And if you're still focusing on that left eyeball, the ears, the nose, everything disappears. And all you've got left is one eyeball. This is called focusing. Same when you're meditating. Just watching the breath. You can hear all these other sounds, you can feel your body. So many other things, but they're on the edge of the screen. If you keep focusing on your breath, always focusing on it, keeping it central. After a while, your body falls off the screen. What body? Can you hear anything? What sound? What can you know? Just the breath. And that fills the whole mind. Just like the eyeball filled the whole mind of that archery student. This is what happens in meditation. It's called focusing. It's called samadhi. Where the mind just goes in and stays with one thing. And it fills the whole screen of your consciousness. And everything else falls off. And because it's so simple and so focused, it becomes incredibly strong. It is like the magnifying glass taking that superpower mindfulness, which is bright and can see the beautiful green grass and the wonderful flowers. But now it's putting it all in one spot. And wow, that becomes powerful. It becomes burning, burning with energy. When you start focusing the energy of the mind like that, the breath starts to become a light. It starts to burn, which is the meaning of the word meditation, jayati, it burns. That's jhana, that's where it comes from. It's the same word in Pali, in Sanskrit. Interesting why it's the same word. You're empowering this moment. Not actually making it a flame, but making it intense with energy and power. And so this breath becomes incredibly incandescent. And that the mind comes up from within that, the beautiful nimitta. And that becomes so bright and so brilliant. Brighter than a thousand suns. Just so incandescent, sometimes you think you're going to go blind. But you're not seeing it with the eyes, you're seeing it with the mind. The energies of mindfulness start to really increase here. And with that powerful energy comes incredible bliss. Sometimes you think, as I told somebody in interviews, sometimes you think you can't take any more bliss. You're going to explode in bliss. But there's one insight I found. You can always take more bliss. It's a wonderful insight to discover. There's no limit to the bliss you can experience. Bliss upon bliss, and really get into it. As the mind focuses. And once it gets into this going inwards business, it's as if it's like a momentum of inwardness builds up in the mind. It's a momentum of focusing. It's just naturally, if you get into like a nimitta this way, you want to see what's in the middle of the nimitta. You still keep on going inwards. And because you start going into the center of these things, That's where the jhanas happen. You just go into the middle of the nimitta, into the middle of this bliss. And there you get this experience called the first jhana. You go into the middle of that. You go into the second jhana. And just keep on going inwards. Just this beautiful lotus is opening one after the other. You're learning how to really focus. And the thing is, the reason why you keep going inwards is you get to a certain stage in this focusing business and it gets so much fun, so much joy. What's inside pulls you to it. The mindfulness after a while can't resist. When the sun is looking like that beautiful lotus, it's just too beautiful. It captivates the attention. Joy becomes the glue of concentration. So before, people always like to concentrate because they force the mind, they push the mind onto the object. Now the object actually pulls the mind onto it. So it's not done for willpower anymore. It's not done through desire, through force. It's completely effortless. One completely lets go and the very joy of this middle, this center of you, pulls your attention to it. It pulls you inside. You see this beautiful nimitta, it just pulls you, can't resist it. And it just pulls you into the middle of it. And the jhanas keep pulling you in. The sheer joy and bliss of it. Sometimes what happens when you get to these powerful stages, they're so wonderful you get afraid. You get scared. Ah, this is too much for me. If I go any deeper, I'm going to have to become a monk. I'm going to have to become a nun. What's my husband going to say? And you get all sorts of scary, fiery things like that. And you don't have to worry about these things. But the point is that sometimes you're so fearful because it's something powerful. More powerful than you've ever seen before. The most powerful experience of your existence. And sometimes you think, I can't do this, but what the hell, it's too much fun. Because the joy of it just overcomes the fear and scariness as you disappear and allow everything to happen. This is all focusing. So when people say the truth lies within, it's very absolutely accurate. But actually to go within takes this degree of focusing. Letting go and allowing everything to go inside. And as you do that, you go so deep within yourself. You can't hear and feel the world outside. Even in the state of the beautiful nimittas, when the nimittas get reasonably strong, you can't hear the birds, no matter how much noise they're making. You can't hear me. You can't hear anybody. You can't even feel your body. You've just gone so deep inside that you cannot access the body and the five senses anymore for that period. Which is why you can sit for long periods of time. You don't even feel the passage of time. You don't even feel the body. But an amazing thing happens when you have these long sits in deep samadhi. Sometimes you would think that, if I sit for 3 hours, when I get up afterwards, my knees will be aching, my back will be sore, even my bottom will be sore. But it's a strange thing happens. You can sit for 1 hour when you don't get into samadhi, and you might ache all over. You sit for 3 hours or 4 hours in samadhi and there's no ache or pain whatsoever. You get up just light, painless, just floating in the air, as it were. So you don't have to worry about anything in the power of the deep meditations, as if the body just really relaxes. And that's another thing I should really talk about the fact that when you do really let go and you go deep inside, you go beyond your body, within the body, to a point where the body has fallen off your screen, you'll find the body relaxes so much. It becomes so peaceful, so content, that energies can start to flow through the body. The healing energies. Some of you might have experienced that already. Usually in the retreats, people experience when they get into reasonable states of stillness, flows of energy through the body. Parts of your body getting inexplicably hot, or even sometimes things jerking. And people wonder, what is that? Somebody's already mentioned that happens to them. And I told them to make sure you sit a long distance from the person next to you. And it sometimes happens. And they say, why does that happen? Why did it suddenly get hot? On the last retreat I gave here, in interview time, a woman came and said, I was sitting, I was very still, it was very lovely, but my whole back and shoulders were just so hot. And I asked them, you got a back problem then? And they started laughing. Yeah, they said, yeah, how do you know that? Like, it's obvious. But this, I know this. When you let go and you go deep within, the energies in the body have a chance to work properly. When you're not interfering, you're not getting in the way, the qi, as they say in Chinese medicine, or the winds, as they say in Indian medicine, have a chance to flow freely. When you get out of the way, sometimes they flow to the areas of the body where they really need it. If you've got a sore back or sore shoulders, that's where the energies go. When those energies build up in those areas, it gets hot, like a fever happening there. It's just the body doing what it's supposed to do, if you only give it a chance. And healing takes place. That's why in those deep meditations, it's amazing just how things in the body can balance so well. And how healing and health can happen. But only if one gets out of the way and goes so deep, one can hardly feel the body at all. So this is like centering and focusing. And perhaps one of the most interesting things about this morning's talk, the most practical, is whatever distraction you have, an ache in the body, a sound outside of you, even a thought obsessing your mind, don't make it a problem. If you make it a problem, you're putting it in the center of your field of awareness. It becomes the most important thing. And because of that, your meditation object falls off the screen and you lose it. Always keep the meditation object the central part of your awareness. Other things are on the edge. Sound, feelings in the body, even thoughts. They're over here somewhere. But I'm on the breath. And after a while, they will all disappear. And you're just left with the breath. Fills your whole mind. But be careful at this point. Sometimes you can't say, the breath is filling my whole mind. If you can say that, it's not filling your whole mind. A thought has come in and centered itself. Because when you meditate, it comes to these reasonably middle stages and deep stages of the meditation. You cannot assess them. At the time, you cannot really make a description of what's happening. If you're making a description, you're disturbing. The experience is not filling your whole mind. When you see that eyeball of the bird, you actually don't know you're not seeing the rest of the bird. All you know is you're seeing an eyeball, just one eyeball. That other concept of what's missing is disappeared. When sounds disappear from your consciousness, you don't know I'm not hearing. It's the very concept of hearing has fallen away. It's only afterwards, when you look back, you say, wow, I couldn't hear anything for such a long time. Don't try and make assessments during the meditation. Otherwise, the assessment takes center stage and everything else falls off the screen of your mind. So this is what we call like focusing, going inwards. And it's the path which sees the nature of what's in the very middle of you. Find out what's the essence. What makes you tick? Who is this who is deciding to come here? Who is this who does all this knowing business? Who is the one inside? Centering and focusing. So, any questions on that? Yes.
When somebody, I hope it's you, when some people have to be on meditation.
Yeah.
And the meditation is actually make them either sleepy or poor concentration. Because the purpose of the meditation, because I think, is to keep the body really important to listen. And so they either sleep most of the time. But I said, what happened to their mind at that time? Why do they have to be on medication? What happened to the mind?
Okay, if you're on some sort of medication, some sort of drug, it makes the mind at first just all woozy. But it is the mind is actually almost working through the brain, working through the body. And because of that, it gets affected by what's happening to the body. So you just, a person on those drugs, like with sloth and torpor, you just make peace with that. Don't fight. And after a while, by making peace, the mind will become empowered. And it comes to the point where the mind becomes more powerful than the body. And then the mind starts to shine. And even though the body is almost anesthetized, the mind can become very bright and brilliant. It's almost like the mind is separating itself from the body. And by separating itself from the body, separating itself from the brain and the drug-induced cloudiness which the brain has. So you just go in, keep on going in, and in, and in, and right in the center you'll find a space where those drugs don't reach.
I was experienced once when it was heavily drugged, and then I saw the light, but I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Come by, but I didn't do anything.
This is what happens. If you do things, then all those lights and things, you're just too busy. You're just disturbing everything. So they cannot come. You see, imagine this like light in the bottom of a glass of water. And if that glass of water is just being agitated, you can't see the light properly. Or imagine if it's the light, it's like, is the moon. And you're watching the moon in a lake with a reflection on that lake. And if there's waves on that lake, the nimitta of the moon is all just fragmented. It's moving, it never stays still because the water is moving. Only when the lake is absolutely still, glassy still as they say, and nothing is moving at all, then you can see the reflection of the moon. And it doesn't matter if in that lake there's lots of drugs. On the surface, the mind can be reflected. The drugs affect the body, not the mind. Deep within, the mind is just waiting to burst forth and give you a good time. Yes.
Adam, the last couple of sits, but the body's disappeared, but I've been in a space where
Yes, the spaciousness. Good, thank you for asking that question. Sometimes when the beautiful breath disappears, there is a space. You've let go, but there's no focus yet. Things aren't in a little tiny ball. They're just too big. So the energy is there, but it's all spread out. Which is why that it's good when you have the breath. See if you can make it into a beautiful breath before you let the breath go. Because sometimes what happens, you're watching the present moment awareness and silence, and you got the breath, and then the breath disappears. You're peaceful, but there's not enough energy and joy there yet. The mindfulness hasn't been empowered. Which is why the beautiful breath is very important. And the Anapanasati Sutta, as taught by the Buddha, which I maybe mentioned in another talk, and after you have full awareness of the breath, the next stage, according to the Buddha, is developing piti sukha, the joy and happiness with the breath. It's an important stage if one is going to take it into deep jhanas. Because if when you have the breath, it's like a fork in the road. You can go to peace. It's very nice, but it's a cul-de-sac. You cannot go deeper from there. But if you take the other fork of the road, you go into the joyful breath, the beautiful breath. This breath is just so wonderful, so nice, so delicious. Then when the breath disappears, you're not just left with peace, you're left with beautiful peace, delicious peace. And that's where the nimitta usually comes up. A little fork in the road there of meditation. So So it doesn't matter, just keep on practicing. And what happens after a while, just the peace builds up so much, the mind becomes bright, joy arises in the mind, and it's like having a cup of coffee, but you haven't had anything at all. The mind is empowered with superpower mindfulness. Okay, yeah. Yeah, going a bit too fast. Don't take shortcuts. Patience is the fastest way. Doing nothing is the best thing you can possibly do. I'm not a Zen teacher, I'm a Theravada, but sometimes you say all these things. So just like Zen. Patience, the fastest way. Doing nothing is the best thing to do. Any other questions? Anyone has? Okay, see if you can focus. It happens quite naturally. Whatever you look at, allow the mind just to focus in. And that's called samadhi. What samadhi means is actually going into a one-pointedness of mind. In the Pali it's called ekagata. But the word actually is, sometimes we call it one-pointedness, but it's not quite a good translation. Eka means one, and agga is actually not just a point, but like a peak, like a summit. And many people will recognize that word if I give its Sanskrit equivalent. Agga is the Pali, and the Sanskrit is agra. And have everyone ever heard about agra before? Not agro, agra. Yeah, Taj Mahal. And the reason the Taj Mahal is there and the Red Fort is there, the reason why it's called Agra, it literally means capital, the capital city. It was the capital, the head city, the peak administration center in the time of the Mughal emperors of India. So Agra means like a peak or a summit, a high point. So when you say one pointedness of mind, it doesn't mean any old point. It means one peak, one summit of the mind. Someone's going really deep, but that deepness is very high and very beautiful and very lofty. So it's getting all the energies and putting into one place, focusing in until the mind is just so deep and so focused. That's called samadhi. And one stays there because the sheer joy of it and the simplicity of it means that nothing can disturb it. You've gone so deep that the things which can disturb and usually get you out just can't reach you anymore. Sounds are already gone. Feelings in the body have disappeared. So you're deep within. The usual things which stop you carrying on meditating are no longer able to reach you. All the alarm clocks of your mind are turned off. Your remote control is turned off. All your SMS and mobile phones are beyond your reach. So you just stay there, still. Which is why the deeper samadhi you get, the longer it lasts. So one way you can always find out how deep you've gone in your meditation is just how long you can sit effortlessly with happiness. The deeper you go, the longer it lasts. So even in limiters, it usually lasts a while. And the first jhana usually lasts for quite a long time. And the deeper, the longer you last. Sometimes you go in these meditations very, very deep, and you just can't come out. Hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. You miss all your appointments. You miss breakfast, but you also miss lunch. You also miss the evening talk. Just sitting there. If I see anyone doing that, they're sitting there, look like they're dead, I'll just leave you there. So don't call the undertaker, don't call the police. Just somebody is in deep meditation. Leave them alone. Isn't that nice? Okay, any other questions before we finish off? I had a short talk this morning, but it's good. Going, going, gone. Okay, so please focus and go inwards. Happens naturally. Today's, what's it called? The interviews, got them on the board here. This is, it's Monday today, isn't it? Yes, right, Monday. So Monday is